Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly show looking at what's new and what's going on in the world of tech from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, please do. We always love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address you need. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week, we'll be bringing you some of the highlights from the recent RNIB Tech Fair in Northern Ireland. Amelia Hilton was there chatting to a wide variety of exhibitors and visitors, so we'll be hearing how she got on. Plus, one of our listeners will be sharing their tech timeline. Hubert Pavalkovich and Jackie Brown joining me this week. Welcome to both of you. Let's see what's new and what's going on. Jackie, you've had a busy week, I guess, at the tech fair. Anything new with you this week? I mean, it doesn't have to be from the tech fair. We'll be talking about it enough anyway.
Yeah, I was at the tech fair on Wednesday and it was a good day. It was a horrible day weather-wise. But I think that's sort of par for the course across the UK. But it was a good day. It was a very, very big venue. The Foyle Arena in Derry is huge because it's a leisure centre. There's a swimming pool there and there are sort of squash courts and all that kind of thing. So the hall itself was very big. But it was good because it gave people an opportunity to wander around. But apart from Tech Fair, the other thing I wanted to raise today is that there is a new app which is called Perspective Intelligence. It's a free app, but there is an in-app purchase, if you like, where you can pay for, you know, a subscription for perhaps a few extras within the app. But what this app does, it's like many others that are on the market at the moment. It does OCR. It's got an aspect called live vision. So if you want to hold your phone up and it will describe what's around you, there's scenery, there is an AI model in it. But I think the really important thing for a lot of people about this app is that it's offline. So everything you do with it, once you download the app from the App Store, and I'm afraid it is only on iOS, so I'm sorry about that, Android users. But if you download it from the App Store, you don't have to have it online or do anything else. The AI model and everything in it is done offline. So for those people who really covet their privacy, this is maybe an app for you. There's OCR, there's recognition of objects. There's a lot in it. And as I say, there is a paid version, which does give you a few more features. But the really important aspect of it, I think, is the fact that for many people, they just don't like going online, especially when they're looking for text recognition of, you know, personal items. They just don't like it going to the cloud, which is understandable. So this app is all done within the app offline.
I've heard a lot about this one and I've not tried it yet. I keep meaning to. It's one of those apps where I keep meaning to download it and give it a go, but I just haven't yet. But this is the big sell with this app, is that, as far as I understand it anyway, everything is local. Everything is done locally on device. And we should just say, by the way, the reason it's not on Android is because it's tapping into the Apple intelligence capabilities of your phone. So I assume it would only run on the 15 Pro and above iPhones as well, because it does need the Apple intelligence models to work. But it sounds like a good app. And I'll tell you what else is quite cool about it. It's created by blind developers.
Exactly.
Which I always think is really interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's called Perspective Intelligence, two words. It's available free to download from the App Store. And there is an in-app purchase. I always think that's a mouthful. But there is an in-app purchase and that will open up a couple of extra features. But that's one definitely to try. I've recently downloaded it and hopefully we'll have a demo of it on Tech Talk in the future.
Interesting, yeah. Perspective intelligence. Give it a go. I know I will be. I'll get round to it eventually. Hubert, anything new with you this week?
You should put on your Todoist app, the to-do app we've talked about quite a few times.
Good thinking.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, a short one from me, but one that's always been debated on iOS. So iOS 26.3 is out now as of this recording. It was released earlier, a few days ago. And there's not many warnings about it. It's kind of, you know, there's an interesting feature which allows people to switch to Android and transfer all their data, which is quite interesting and an interesting step in the kind of iPhone, Android, iOS debacles. But the warning that is there, if you are a dictation user, I'm hearing mixed reviews about this, but if you are a dictation user, you are warned not to install this update because the reliability of dictation has considerably degraded, supposedly, with iOS 26.3. I've not installed it yet, but I have spoken to users that have, and, I mean, they are not getting particular issues, but some people also saying they are. So I guess it's kind of a mixed bag issue. But if you do use dictation quite a lot, I would say you may want to hold off, is the warning I've seen on Apple this.
Interesting. I haven't downloaded it yet either, so I've had a busy week and I just haven't got round to it. But yeah, I'm not fond of dictation anyway. I just get round fairly reasonably without dictation. The only time I maybe use it is if I'm asking Siri to open an app or something like that. But actual dictation, I tend not to do it. So, but yeah, it's an interesting one to be aware of for those who do depend on dictation.
I quite honestly these days use Braille screen input for my input text. It's fantastic. Considering I used to not understand how it works, you know, that's probably my primary input method.
I'm exactly the same. It was there for years, was Braille screen input. And I would try it every now and again and just couldn't get to grips with it. And then
I'm the same.
For me, it was when... does anyone remember the FlickType app?
Yes, a long time ago.
Yeah, it was when that went away and a lot went on there. But basically, it's pretty unlikely to come back. So I thought, right, well, I need to do something about this because that on-screen keyboard is just not the best. I don't think Siri itself is affected. So when you were saying about using it to open apps and things like that, I think that's fine. It's just the text aspect of dictation, you know, dictating text. One thing I would say, though, I mean, I only use dictation for very, very short messages. And the reason for that is that I've always found it really inaccurate anyway.
It doesn't always get things right, and I've had some I had some mistakes that if I were dared to send the message dictation originally put in, I might get into a bit of trouble with various people. So, yeah, it's already tricky sometimes to say, yeah, it works.
And the thing is, right, I mean, I play around with Android. I've got an Android phone for work, and I use it generally just for testing and, you know, playing around with new apps and stuff. And Google's text-to-speech or Samsung's text-to-speech, either one, because I've got a Samsung phone, theirs is unbelievable for accuracy.
Yes, it is.
It's spot on.
Yeah, I would agree, because my husband he's got a Google Pixel 10, and if he dictates text as well, and I think the dictation on Android is better, actually, than the dictation on iPhones. I know that might be controversial, but I think it is true.
There you go, Steve Nutt. If you're listening, you'll be happy with that one. It is. It's just, I just find it far more accurate, far more responsive on Android. But yeah, if you are a dictation user, if you do rely heavily on it, then you might want to hold off on this update. As you said, though, mixed reviews. Some people are saying they can't tell the difference. Others are saying it's not great. So, bit of an interesting one there. It's worth keeping an eye on Apple Viz, as we say all the time. Definitely keep an eye on the Apple Viz blog and comments for things like this, because those guys are so on it when it comes to bugs and feeding back to Apple and everything. So, I've heard about a cool little app this week, which, again, I've not had a chance to try yet. I've downloaded it, but I've not needed to get an Uber in the last few weeks. But This app is called Curb to Car, and apparently what you do...
I've heard this.
Yeah. Again, developed... I don't know if it was developed by blind people, but it was certainly developed in partnership with blind people, which is just as good. And apparently what you do is... You know when you request an Uber and you get details of the car? So it might say it's a silver Toyota something, and it gives you the registration number. So when you get all that info, you go over to Curb to Car, you put all of that information in, or at least as much as you can put in, and using your phone's camera, it will first off announce when it sees the car and will then give you directions to it, either audible or haptic directions or both. And I really can't wait to try this. This is, if it works as well as I'm hoping it does, this could be such a good app.
I'm curious how well it would work on if you're getting picked up off of a busy street, because there'll be cars of all sorts.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
You know, either stationary or driving by. It would be quite interesting how it manages to find the right car when Dusty's sees the guide dog grumbles in the background, as how it finds a car in such a complicated environment where there's a lot of cars in different positions.
Caesar thinks it's taking over his job, clearly.
Caesar's just heard the word taxi and he goes, will they accept me?
No, I'm the same. And I mean, I've had occasions where, like, for example, when you go out of my local train station at Bolton, the taxi drop-off point is sort of across the road a little bit. So you come out of the train station and then the car, rather than pulling up right outside, you cross this... It's not a big road, it's just a tiny little kind of, I guess like a little separation, I think it seems to be, between the train station and the car park. But you go across there, and it's not always the easiest to get across because you can hear cars all over the place and I just don't feel confident trying to cross it on my own. But it would be interesting to see kind of how far it picks up from as well. You know, do you have to be near the point where the car would pick you up? I mean, obviously it's only the maximum it's going to be is the range of your camera. But yeah, I'm curious to see how well this works. It's always the reality test, isn't it? You know, these sound great in theory, but how kind of practical is it in the real world when you're sort of rushing about and there's cars everywhere, there's people everywhere? But it's getting some good reviews.
Yeah, but I wonder how, if that would work with the Meta glasses being on.
So yeah.
You didn't need your phone, because, you know, there's always this feeling about, you know, having your phone out and holding it up outside. You know, and I just wonder whether the more discretionary part of it might be that I wonder if the Meta Ray-Bans or smart glasses generally could actually do that work when it's linked to your phone.
Yeah, I mean, we've got the classic limitation at the minute where, obviously, on iOS, and again, this app is only for iOS, at least at this stage, but
yeah,
we've got the classic problem where you can't change your camera selection, so... Nothing on the Meta glasses at the minute, but again, with this software development kit opening up, who knows, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
So that's one worth trying as well. I'll definitely be trying that out next time I need to get a taxi. And by the way, this is primarily aimed at Ubers, but it can work with any car. As long as you know the make or the registration or both, then it can work with anything. But the primary purpose where they're aiming it is for getting your Ubers or getting your taxi, but even if you've got someone picking you up and you know the details of the car, then it can keep an eye out for that. So, pretty cool one. I'm looking forward to trying that out, and I'll let you know how I get on. Well, we've got a busy week. It's been a busy week for us here at the RNIB with the tech fair and all that, so let's get into it. This is Tech Talk.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and I am here at the RNIB Northern Ireland Tech Fair 2026 with the MyCare team, which is a new app and online service that makes accessing your health record easier. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Jordan. I'm from the Encompass Project, and we're here today representing MyCare, the brand new digital app in Northern Ireland, where you can now view all of your digital healthcare records.
Why does having this access in an app make things easier for people?
Yeah, so previously within Northern Ireland specifically, you would have had all your medical records on paper, and now the app, now that all five trusts have gone live with the new Encompass system in Northern Ireland, you're now able to access all of these records digitally, and that is what the MyCare app is designed to promote. So the service is provided by Epic, but in Northern Ireland we call it MyCare. If you're looking for it on your mobile device, you'll find it under MyChart. The great thing about the new app is you'll be able to view your appointments, you'll be able to view any medications you're on, any previous visits that you've had, you'll be able to go back in, view all those appointments and see any of the notes the doctor or the consultant may have made at that time.
And what are some of the accessibility considerations for blind and partially sighted people?
Yeah, so the app itself you can use with all the regular screen readers that you may use currently. There's also an enlargement feature as well to make the text substantially larger for blind and partially sighted people to view.
And why is it helpful, aside from the sort of basic accessibility things, why does it empower people to have easy access to their own health records?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I'm type 1 diabetic and rather ironically involved in the Encompass Project myself, but from my own personal standpoint, whenever I used to go to appointments when I was a bit younger, I used to be completely overwhelmed by information that the nurse was giving me at the time. The appointments could be 2, 3, 4 hours long occasionally, and they used to give me information that I would just simply forget. So now, with the power of the MyCare app, I can go back in, I can reflect upon all the notes that have been taken, I can go back through, make sure I haven't missed anything, can double check all my appointments, and it just empowers me to essentially look after my health much more efficiently and much better for me.
Absolutely, and I guess for blind and partially sighted people, like you say, it can be quite emotional and overwhelming to receive a diagnosis or hear about a new treatment, but they can also, if they choose, much more easily share this information to get advice or sort of contact other services and charities that can help them.
Yeah, absolutely. And over time, as the app develops and becomes more progressive, there'll be more two-way communication between the patient themselves and the person they're seeing in the hospital. The great thing about the app as well now is there's also a proxy access. So if you want to allow maybe access for relatives to also have an oversight into your healthcare records, then that is possible now as well. So it's just involving whoever you're comfortable involving with in your healthcare journey. And that's what the app is here to empower people to do.
Fantastic. And who is able to get the MyCare app, and how can people get it or ask questions if they need support?
Yeah, so anybody in Northern Ireland who is part of a trust already, so any of the five trusts, they will have access to their own digital healthcare record. The process is quite straightforward. So as long as you have an NI Direct account, which hopefully most people would already have during COVID times, you can sign up for the app itself. And as I mentioned earlier, the app can be found on the App Store under it'll be under MyChart as opposed to MyCare. But once you download the app, you simply pop in your details for NI Direct and you can sign in and view all your information straight away.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for talking to us at RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and I'm here at the Northern Ireland RNIB Tech Fair 2026, joined by Martin from NaviLens. Hi, Martin.
Hi, very nice to meet you.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. So there's a lot of NaviLens codes here today. What are some of the big successes for NaviLens users here in Northern Ireland?
Yeah, well, I would say this event is clearly a success of a NaviLens implementation, where we have the NaviLens codes all over the different booths, but also in the different areas of the foil arena, which is very exciting. I've seen a lot of people using the technology today to get around. But we've certainly seen a lot of traction in Northern Ireland ever since we did the implementation at Grand Central Station in Belfast, which I don't know if you've had the chance to view, but it's an amazing implementation. We have the NaviLens codes on the tactile paving to help the visitors find their way to the different places, and also in the different gates, in the bus stops that are at the station, as well as ticketing machine and shops. So I would say that is a very, very successful implementation that I'm very proud of. And we more recently started implementing the NaviLens technology at the Leslie Bloomfield Shopping Centres here in Northern Ireland. We did that together with the RNIB. We had some testers from the RNIB validate the solution, and we're very, very happy to see that more and more places are looking at adopting NaviLens to enhance accessibility.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and it seems like it's been such a successful collaboration so far. What has made some of the success? It sounds like there's been a lot of working together. You've been testing with blind and partially sighted people in the area. What can other places that want to implement NaviLens learn from these examples?
I think for us, our core mission is to empower independence for the blind and low vision community. So the first thing we do ever since the beginning is working very closely with the community to make sure that the features that we're adding to the NaviLens technology are actually useful. So I would say the first thing is always to try and gather a group of blind low vision users from the community, whether it be from the RNIB or any other organizations that we have here in the UK. And make sure that the implementation is done in a way that is actually helping them navigate the spaces independently.
Absolutely, and you've had different people with different ideas come up to the stand today. You had a woman ask about using just one code for her business. You've had other people coming up. What are some of the range of projects or events or locations that NaviLens can help make more accessible?
Well, that's a very good question. The NaviLens technology is very, very versatile, and it's used in a lot of different use cases. So ranging from product packaging accessibility, where we started to work with Kellogg's back in 2020, and ever since we've been growing very rapidly in that sector. We also work in transit. As you know, we have museums. So tourism is something that we are also growing and expanding on a lot, and even for personal use. So I've had a lot of people today, as you very well mentioned, we had a lady that came up to the booth. She was asking about a code for her psychotherapy clinic to make it accessible. But I've also had people that have come up to ask about the personal codes that we offer for free via the NaviLens app. And we have a lot of users that have them at home to label the different elements. So as you can see, the possibilities are endless, from packaging to transit to tourism to domestic use, you name it.
Yeah, and it's really exciting because thinking about a therapy session, for example, and you've worked with people that provide period products in the past, helping people have this independence and feel in control of the situation for such personal matters that impact their everyday life, like navigating to important appointments or events, that's so personal. Your own hygiene is such a personal thing. So it's really exciting to think about all of the changes that NaviLens is helping people make.
Absolutely. That is something that we're very proud of. And speaking of privacy and personal use, one thing that we're very concerned with at NaviLens is the privacy and cybersecurity of our technology. So our goal is to help people independently and in a free way to make their lives better while keeping their privacy and data to themselves without having to be concerned about that.
It's really helpful that people understand how their data is used and how that data is stored, and NaviLens is, through offering codes rather than analyzing videos, is maybe offering a different level of privacy than some other alternatives here.
Yeah, absolutely. And everything is stored locally on the device, so we don't gather any images, we don't gather any data from the user. So for example, like you were mentioning before, there might be people that may want to label the different elements that they have at home that are of course private, and only they are going to be able to have access to that information. So not even us can have access to that detail. So I think that's something that is important to consider as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And where can people access the free codes that you talked about, or get in touch if they want to buy a package for a larger project or organization?
Well, in the NaviLens app, on the main menu, which is at the top left of the app, there is a section that says request personal codes. And it's as simple as introducing your email, and then you instantly receive more than 1,000 blank codes in different sizes that the users can print at home and label independently. Then we also have specific kits, free kits, for different types of organizations, such as like associations. We have for events, for bathroom, libraries, health centers, and you can find those kits at free.navilens.com, where you also introduce your email, and you can even upload your logo, and you would receive the codes with preset information that can be used by the public in the different use cases that we offer. And then for a more custom experience and for a professional code, feel free to reach out to info@navilens.com and we will provide more information.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Martin from Navilens, for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Time now on RNIB Connect Radio for one of our tech timelines. And joining me now is Georgia Strachan. Georgia, thanks for joining us. Welcome to Tech Talk.
Thanks for having me. It sounded interesting the moment I read about it.
Tell us a little bit about you and how you got interested in technology. What first got you? I always see it as you can get kind of hooked on technology for me, but yeah, what got you started?
It kind of started for me in a weird way where I was already a gamer, so I was already into consoles and all that, and I had a DS when I was younger. But what got me into proper PC technology and Windows and whatnot was actually in school. My handwriting was so bad that the teachers gave up on having me write things, and instead they gave me this big chunky Toshiba laptop with Windows XP on it and told me, just type your stuff on Word. So I had to learn how to use Word because the teachers had no clue. So I just learned how to use Word, learned how to use Windows XP, which is amazing, by the way. I miss it.
Yes.
And that's it. Like, it just kind of spiraled from there. And in secondary school, they evolved to having iPads because the secondary school had a dedicated department for visually impaired pupils. So they were like, here, have an iPad. And again, learned how to use iOS, learned how to use the iPad, even started my own club to do that, to teach the QTVIs on how to use the iPads and their accessibility features so they could pass that on to students.
So was that using, back in those days, was that using the low vision features or the screen readers? Like, how were you getting around it?
Yeah, like VoiceOver, magnifiers, the high contrast, because a lot of the QTVIs, they weren't aware of it because they were just starting to be used in the schools. Like, obviously iPads have been around for a long, long time, but as I was joining school, they were just starting to adopt them. It used to just be the chunky laptops, but they realised that in a classroom, an iPad's a lot easier because most of the tasks that the pupils have to do is reading, mainly, like reading digital copies of textbooks or maybe typing a document, just a simple one, you know, just get the keyboards and plug them in. So knowing the accessibility features of iOS was more important than learning about a laptop at that point.
Yeah, I've seen that quite a bit of how the iPad can sometimes be a bit more of an introduction, really, or a bit of an easier introduction.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I mean, I'll always prefer like just desktops because there are more features and it's more open. But I also had an iPad in uni, and I can't deny that was a lot easier to carry around and put on those narrow lecture benches than a big laptop, because I could only use the large screen laptops. That's the thing with iPad, you get such a big screen on such a thin device, it makes it so much easier to carry around, and you still get your screen real estate, because while I can see, small text just isn't going to work for me. I have to use bigger text, and iOS has a really consistent accessibility features for visual stuff, not just VoiceOver, but if you make the text big in one app, it makes it big in everything, and that was my favourite thing.
How did it kind of go from there? So you got started with XP and moved on to the iPad, and then was there anything else that kind of caught your interest from there?
Well, I guess in secondary school it was also, you know, computer science itself, the subject, because I was already interested, and thankfully by then the school computers had Windows 7, and then eventually Windows 10 somehow. I don't know how they managed to do that. They're usually so far behind. But from there, I just did computer science, learned like how to do programming and all that. And programming was really fun. We used Python. So it was really easy to do stuff in Python because there's a lot of stuff that you don't have to be super specific. It's less fussy than other languages. And from there, it just kind of kept going. And then, of course, as I was growing up, the internet was getting more and more accessible. I never had to deal with dial-up in my youth at all. So it ended up just having the information available, and then it kept going. And I said, went to uni. That was also computer science, so got even more knowledge. And then while I was in uni, I ended up using Linux as well. And right now, Linux is on my main laptop. So just for experimenting, I literally just installed it to learn about it and just try using it every day to see what it was like. And it's been really fun.
What is that accessibility like nowadays? Because I feel like that's something we never really talk about. We talk about Windows and Mac all the time, but Linux, I mean, I used Linux, yeah, similar to you, back in my university days doing networking and doing security, but half the time we couldn't get the accessibility to work. So half the time it was just over, getting really geeky now, but it was just over SSH, which is, to put it into simple terms for those who don't know, it's kind of a way of like remotely logging into a machine and doing everything that you need to do still in your Windows environment or your Mac environment. That's a bit of a simplified explanation, but that's kind of what it is. So are you using the desktop accessibility of Linux itself then?
Yeah, and also a point on SSH there, we had to use that a lot during the pandemic
Oh, yeah.
because two of my uni years were during lockdown, the crazy times, and that's how I learned about it and what it was used for and all. It was a bit complicated, but good thing it was a computer science class, I guess. But with desktop stuff, I think it's gotten a lot better. I don't know how it was in the early days of Linux, but in general, Linux wasn't as usable in the early days anyway. But now that they're trying to go for more user friendliness, it means they're going for more accessibility. I know that GNOME, which is one of the more popular desktop environments used in the most popular Linux distributions like Ubuntu, that has in the installer itself, the first thing it asks you is, what accessibility features do you want on? Do you want zoom on? Do you want the bigger text? Do you want screen reader? So I think that's a good step. I use Arch Linux, which is one of the sort of less user-friendly ones. The installer is just the terminal, and you have to do the command line, kind of like back in the old days, and manually do everything. But because you can pick your desktop environment, I picked a KDE Plasma, which is like this really fancy-looking one that looks a bit more like Windows and has more customization, I guess. But one of my favorite things is it has the magnifier shortcut from Windows. So I don't know if you've used the magnifier on Windows, but like you can just do the Windows key and plus or minus to zoom in and out without having to go into your settings and open the magnifier app. You can do the same in certain desktop environments, and you can make the pointers bigger too. I'm not sure about screen readers though. I know Orca is a popular screen reader on Linux specifically, but I don't know how good it is. I would need to ask people that use it.
That's really interesting. Yeah, it sounds like it has come a lot. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, realistically, since I was using it, probably about maybe 6, 7 years ago, but I suppose it's a long time in tech, I guess.
Oh, yeah, it's basically a lifetime at that point. Like, so much can change, especially in the open source places, because it is community driven. So much can change because it's usually not a company that wants to keep everything stable. A lot can change, especially within Linux. At least Windows, not much really changes over a few years. The most that might happen is Windows gets a minor new feature and that's it. Like, nothing breaks. But Linux, it's like, oh, you've just updated. Well, these packages don't work anymore. You can't use these programs until you install this version.
Yeah, I've experienced that, but that's a whole other story. So, what kind of thing are you using now, and what kind of, I guess, do you work in tech now, or what sort of thing are you doing?
So currently, I'm using, even on my laptop is Linux, and I have a desktop PC that I built in 2019. Using and that just runs Windows, and it's mostly for gaming. In terms of what I'm doing now, I guess I'm volunteering with a e-waste recycling company. They do other things too, but I am just there for the e-waste part because we get electronics donated, like old laptops from companies. Or right now, I've got a big printer in front of me that has some problems, and we try and refurbish them and sell them on. And we used to get some interesting things. Like, once we got a PC in from a dental lab, and the inside of it was just full of white powder, like whatever they were
Oh,
using to
wow.
make like fillings and all the dentures and all that. Oh, it was horrible. But you do get some fun stuff. We actually got
Wow.
an old oscilloscope once as well.
How accessible do you find that, I guess, getting into the physical side of it? Because I must admit, that's something that I've never really done, like building my own machines or kind of taking them apart and replacing components and things like that. I'm too nervous, to be honest.
I will admit, when I did do the PC in 2019, my friend did most of it because he'd done it before. And I was very scared because to me, these are like expensive PC parts. And my opinion was, oh my goodness, if you breathe on them, then they're going to break. Or if you put it together wrong, then they'll just short circuit and explode or whatever. And then you've just wasted all your money. And I realized that. So after the pandemic, this is why I started volunteering at this e-waste place, was so that I would have access to dead or old electronics that I could mess with and take apart and put back together on my own terms in a chilled environment. And you know, there's no pressure. Oh, if you break it, it's not too bad. It's really old anyway. Like we're talking like old like Optiplex machines with Pentiums in them, like really slow processors that nobody wants anymore anyway. But that definitely improved my confidence, but I still have to use a couple little tips and tricks to get around. The main one being my phone, just taking pictures of everything. Like if I need to read the motherboard, because the little headers and that, all the little bits to plug into, the labels are teeny, teeny, tiny. And just take a picture with your phone and zoom in and just check. And my other one is a head torch. Always have a head torch on. It just makes life so much easier because even if you have a light source above you, when you've got your head right over the PC case, it's going to block all the light. So it's just nice to have a head torch and just loads of light to make things readable and just double checking connectors and all that. But I think it got easier. Still fiddly, but you know, PC parts aren't as fragile as I thought they were. Like I've dropped a few things and they've still worked.
I take it then you've got, if you don't mind me asking, you've got some sort of usable vision then for doing stuff like this.
Yeah, I've got no vision in my left eye at all. That just never worked. And in my right eye, I've got a very limited field of vision. Like it's not top total tunnel vision, but it is like restricted. The peripherals aren't great, which I didn't realize until I was an adult because my eye condition's from birth and it never changed. And I also have nystagmus, which is what makes text really hard to read. So I can see objects around me, no problem. It's mainly just text, any sort of standard print text at arm's length. I can't read it. And I actually didn't know that people could read standard print text at arm's length. And I found out the hard way from people. I noticed people didn't have to zoom into memes whenever like they shared them around, like passing the phone around. And I realized that every time someone passed the phone to me, I had to zoom in to read the text. But you don't realize that because of all the technology around you, there's so many like little accessibility features and even stuff that isn't an accessibility feature because it is digital. It's just so much more flexible in how to read and write it. And then I think it's all good. And then suddenly a bit of paper comes in front of me that I cannot read or it's really straining to read. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm visually impaired.
Yeah, it's nice when you get to a point where you can almost. I mean, I do a similar thing. Even though I'm a full-time screen reader user, you kind of, for me, it's when you grab someone else's phone or someone else's machine. You know, if they say, like, "Oh, can you just fix this?" Usually with computers, because with phones nowadays, it's not too bad. But you sit down at someone else's laptop or someone else's computer, and then suddenly kind of go, "Oh, right, yeah, hang on." Okay, I can turn on narrator, but now it's talking painfully slow and it's. Yeah, I've customized quite a bit actually on this.
Yeah, like you just don't realize how much you've adapted your own setup to like fit your needs. I mean, I have it with a pointer actually. Whenever I've used my mum's laptop, because I am the family tech support, you're probably not surprised to hear that. You probably are your family's tech support too.
Yeah.
And I every time I go to her laptop, first thing is, oh no, I can't track the mouse pointer. Where is it? And I love this, such a small feature in Windows, but I love it so much, is the inverted mouse pointer, where no matter what it's over, it inverts the color of the pointer. So you can always find it. It's always in high contrast to everything else without being giant. So it means I can just get away with just putting it up a little bit in size and then just having it be high contrast all the time while making everything else normal looking. which is amazing, and I wish that Linux had it. There's no desktop environment right now that has it, but that's a different tangent. But my point is, yeah, it's just, I'm like, oh, I need to make the pointer bigger, and I sometimes forget to put it back down when I'm done, and she might ask, oh, what's up with the mouse pointer? It's like a different colour. I'm like, oh, well, if you want help with tech support, then I need to be able to see the mouse pointer. And as you said, phones aren't too bad. I just zoom in whenever someone passes me a phone and I can't read it. Or sometimes they'll hold out the phone to me and I'll tell them, like, can I, like, take the phone off you? I can't read it from here. And I usually chill about it.
You mentioned gaming a couple of times. Talk to me about that, how you found that, because the accessibility of gaming seems to have come a long way in the last couple of years. We're talking about gaming now on the show on Tech Talk than I think we've ever done recently, because it's just, as far as I've been concerned, it's just not been accessible up until maybe the last 4 or 5 years.
Oh, you know, it has absolutely exploded in sort of, it's become more mainstream, I guess. That's the best way I can describe it. It used to be that the accessibility features were just like a niche thing that maybe a couple games would have. And it was usually like the indie games that would have them sometimes, because like their whole thing is, we want to be inclusive. We want to get as many people playing our game as possible, so we have to make it accessible. But nowadays, even the big companies are getting in on it, and you get AAA games with so many features, like Spider-Man is a good example. When that came to the PC and I tried Spider-Man 2 for the first time, I usually don't use accessibility features in games. I can get away with not using them, unless it's like very text heavy and the text itself is small, but I've not had that problem all the time. Worst case scenario, I can put the resolution down, which makes everything on the screen look bigger. And a lot of games have like UI scale options anyway, which is really good. Not all of them, but some of them do. And with Spider-Man, it was really specific features. Like, you could make characters, like different types of characters, different solid colors, but you could also just give them an outline, which was a really good middle ground, because I was struggling to find like the bad guys sometimes if they blended into a building or whatever. But I didn't want to make them all just high contrast, solid colours, because it just, I don't know, just kind of breaks the immersion a bit. But I found one where it just makes an outline, and so all the bad guys have a little red outline around them. And I thought, that's a good middle ground for me. And it was there's some really specific settings. There's like actual audio description too, like for the cinematic scenes, like an actual human doing audio description for some of the cinematic stuff, and that was really cool. But it's come a long way, and I hear, so I'm also in the, there's a gaming group run by RNIB Scotland in Northern Ireland, and every week I hear from all different types of gamers about what they're playing, and like it goes from audio games for people with no vision at all to, oh, I have some vision but I struggled with this game, but I found a mod or something on PC to make it better, or directly talking about a developer's response to feedback saying, hey, this isn't accessible or something like that. They're more receptive to adding features in, I think. That's the best part.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. I mean, is it only recently that you've got into gaming, or were you into it at the sort of time?
Oh, no, I've been doing it. Yeah, I've been doing it since I was wee. My first sort of gaming device, I guess, was the Game Boy Advance SP, the one that folds up, which was right before the DS, and that I shared with my sister. It's still in a drawer somewhere, actually.
I feel like I remember my brother having this, you know. I had no idea what I was doing with it, but I'm sure that sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's like, because the original Game Boy Advance, it didn't fold, it was just the buttons were at either side, and it had no backlight, so nobody could see what was going on. But then the SP has a front light, I don't think it matters, it has a light anyway, you can see the screen. But after that, it was the DS, and from there it was handheld, and then sometimes my dad's Xbox 360, because of course, you know, middle-aged man, he gets a 360.
Of course.
And from there, I was mainly a console gamer. Until 2019, I was basically a console gamer the whole time, and I got away with it, because I said I could see objects, and as long as I played on a big enough telly, I could read the text and all that, and just play with friends after school. Mainly Minecraft. I will say it was mainly Minecraft back then. And that, I think that game, because it is such an open sandboxy kind of game, it's so easy to make it accessible to a lot of people, even when there's no accessibility features. There are now, but there weren't back then. But somehow I got away with it.
And we will be hearing more from Callum's conversation with Georgia on next week's Tech Talk.
Back to Northern Ireland for more news from the Tech Fair.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and I'm here at the Northern Ireland RNIB Tech Fair 2026, joined by Richard Moore, who is the CEO of the charity Children in Crossfire. Hi, Richard.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Not at all, my pleasure.
So you are a big advocate for how tech helps you live your everyday life and do your job. Can you tell us about some of the tech that you use all the time?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been employment all my adult life, so I'm 64 now, right? But I've been self-employed for a good part of my life, have run my own business, and then I set up a children's charity, which you mentioned there, and we're celebrating our 30th anniversary this year, Children in Crossfire. But I don't think I would be able to maintain a full-time job if it hadn't been for technology. At the minute, I have my laptop with the JAWS screen reading software on it, which talks, so I'm able to do my emails, I'm able to, you know, read all the documents that's required, Excel documents, all the budget stuff. You know, when you are the CEO of an international charity, then you need to be able to read reports, you need to be able to look at budgets, you need to be able to, you know, correspond with all my colleagues in different parts of the world, and my computer allows me to do that. And also, you know, to keep abreast of what's going on in the sector. Then, you know, I also have my Braille computer, because you do attend a lot of meetings. Can be distracting for visually, or people who can see that if a computer talking all the time. Whereas I have my Braille computer sitting there, and I'm able to read my notes. I'm not a fast Braille reader by any stretch of imagination, but I can manage it enough that if I have notes or questions that I want to ask, or I just want to take notes, then I can do it all on the Braille computer, and so be able to sort of manage myself and agendas at meetings and things like that. Yeah. And then, of course, you have your iPhone. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago, traveling and not being able to read the news, not being able to keep abreast of things, whereas now everything's at the end of your thumb. You just flick along your phone. And I also have the Meta glasses, which I'm wearing at the minute.
Why are they helpful for a fair like this, or for an event like this?
I think an event like this is amazing because visually impaired people need to see what's available. The families of visually impaired people need to see what's available, because genuinely they don't know what's fully out there. Technology's moving that fast. And like I try to keep ahead of technology, but even I learn things when I come here. So the glasses to me are a cheap and effective way, a cost-effective way for visually impaired people, again, to push their horizons. Been able to read documents, lift a magazine, lift a newspaper, lift a letter, handwritten or not, and be able to read it by just asking your glasses to read it to you. And also, you know, been able to describe where you are in a room. Like I was in a hotel room one day and I couldn't find my iPhone. So I asked the glasses, you know, I stood at a strategic point in the room and said, you know, look and find my glasses, or find my phone. And it told me where the phone was. And, you know, it's incredible what it does. And that's, leaving aside, you're able to operate your phone hands-free, take calls, make calls, listen to text messages, send text messages, WhatsApp calls. All that's available through your glasses. And it's not expensive. Like years ago, I reckon glasses like this would have been in the thousands. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about, you know, somewhere between £300 and £400, which, you know, And they're nice, and they're trendy glasses as well, because I have two daughters and loads of friends who would not let me wear anything that doesn't look the part. And I mean, so it's not like you're looking out of the ordinary. It's not like you sort of, it says, oh, there, I am blind or anything on them. You fit in very well, and they do everything that you need to do. So the Meta Glass to me is one of the greatest innovations. One, because of the price, and two, because of what it can do.
Yeah, it sounds like it's made a huge difference to sort of giving you back more time, helping you explore more things independently. For the next, if we think kind of 5 years on, what are some other innovations you'd like to experience in tech for blind and partially sighted people?
Well, I think, you know, they're looking at, you know, technology there for people to move about a lot more, a lot easier, so that tech, like you see the smart white stick up there, the smart stick, and that you can, like I was just getting a wee, I don't use a white stick, so, but I would be looking at something like that, thinking, well, you know, this is using technology to let you know what the stick sees, basically, and you're able to walk freely. I also think it'd be great to get things in real time. You know, the minute the glasses, if you want to look at something or you're walking down the street or whatever, you have to ask it to take a picture, which is fine, it's great, but, you know, it's well advanced from what you had before it. But imagine it was able to do things in real time. You know, where it's actually seeing things as it's happening and communicating to you. And, you know, with the advancements of, you know, 5G on your mobile phone and internet getting a lot faster and mobile phone data getting a lot faster, then real time isn't a pipe dream. I think it's a very strong possibility. And then any help around the home. And one of the greatest things about the RNAB, and a lot of people don't realise this about the RNAB, and I used to be on the board of the RNAB, so I'm very familiar with it, and they're an organisation that has helped me throughout my, since I lost my sight when I was 10 years old. But I mean, what they don't realise is, like, I have a television in the house that talks. You know, I have my, you know, there's other equipment in the house that talks, even things like Alexa and all that. But the RNAB were very much in the driving seat behind making sure that that was available to blind people, encouraging tech companies like Samsung or whoever you would talk about, Hitachi or whatever companies there is, to get them to include that type of technology in their equipment, whether it be a dishwasher, whether it be a washing machine, whether it be a microwave. All that is mainstream now. We just take it for granted. But the reality is there's a lot of work going on there. So I suppose, to get back to your question, where I think real-time information would be good, and seeing and hearing things as it happens, as opposed to sort of, say, having to take a picture. But I'm not complaining. I just think that would be a great advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. And for other blind and partially sighted people in Northern Ireland, for this area specifically, like, what is a change that you'd like to make life easier, or a project that you'd like to see happen?
I do think that technology is the way forward. I genuinely do. I think accessibility, I suppose, is the buzzword, and it means a lot. Accessibility to buildings, accessibility in the street, accessibility in the supermarkets where you do your shopping, making sure websites, making sure whatever technology is out there, whatever equipment you get, it's all accessible. You know, public transport is a big bugbear of mine. I think that should be made more accessible and more information available to, say, blind travellers. If you're looking to find a toilet, for example, on a train, you know, what are you supposed to do? How are you supposed to know where it is? All that sort of stuff should be available when you're walking through supermarkets and all that. Visually impaired people like me have a lot to offer. They want to work, they want to be in employment, and it's just important that employers and people like that engage with the technology as well. And because, like, you have no difficulty as an employer buying a computer for a new employee, getting them their laptop or whatever they need. It just takes a wee step further to be able to make employment accessible to visually impaired people. But don't do it in a way that's a tick box. Do it in a way that visually impaired people are consulted, that the disabled person get their ideas, because there's nobody knows better than me for what I need than me.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Richard Moore, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
And that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. If there's anything that you want to talk about, if anything from the tech fair has caught your interest, or if there's anything else that you want us to chat about or help you with, let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. Voice notes or written emails, always welcome. We'll be back with you same time next week, but from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich and Jackie Brown, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
See you next week.